Hello, Pumpkinheads, and welcome to the Smashing Pumpcast. We have a special show for you today. We are celebrating 30 years of Siamese Dream. And here to celebrate with me, you know him from TikTok, you know him from the Pumpkin Socials, Jacob Givens.
Yay!
Welcome.
I get to celebrate 30 years of Siamese Dream with Frank.
That's right. We're sitting in our rocking chairs and sipping lemonade in this heat.
Reminiscing about the good old days in the 90s.
I remember watching MTV and I saw Chair Rock.
Let's get into it. What is your relationship to Siamese Dream? Take me back to 1993 for you.
Oh, baby, I love talking about this album. This is the turning point that made me the diehard, lifelong Smashing Pumpkins fan. Someone had given me like a poorly dubbed cassette of Gish, I think during eighth grade. And I, you know, there was a lot of stuff on there and I didn't give it the attention that it deserved. But I think that when my eyes kind of bugged out of my head was I got the single soundtrack, Heard Drown. And that was that point where it was like you start going, okay, this is something transcendent. This is something amazing. And I feel like I remember seeing the debut of the Chair Brock video, like anxiously anticipating that to air. And watching it and being mesmerized, the colors, the lights, the forest scenes, seeing Billy ripping the strings off in that shot, and just being like, I love this band. Just feeling that obsession just growing inside of me. And when I bought Siamese Dream, it was one of the first CDs that I bought. So in the journey of switching from tape to CD, this was one of those. And it changed my life. It was that sound. It was that thick, you know, I always describe it as like sonic caramel coming through your speakers. That's what it felt like to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's my love of Siamese Dream. That's where it began. And then, of course, I went back to Gish and gained more of an appreciation for it. And then I've been with the band ever since.
Yeah. I don't know what is, you know, when you're young, there are just certain blind spots. And I remember the single soundtrack, but I don't think I owned it. So I just knew like the movie and Pearl Jam and, you know, of course, like, you know, the infamous, the unaired Pearl Jam performance,
right,
what they
right.
did for that. But like, I knew of that, but it wasn't until I was just randomly, I was obsessed with MTV, you know, Nickelodeon. At that time we had just gotten cable too.
Right.
So then I was just like constantly watching it, and MTV, I was watching it one day, and then all of a sudden, you know, just that did it. And I was like, what?
What's happening?
The colors and everything. And then when those guitars came roaring in, and I just, the visuals and stuff, and just the way that it just landed, like just hit, was like, like there was like that that sonic soundscape just came and absorbed me.
Yeah.
You know, it just like became part of me. And I was like, this is my favorite band. Like this, from here on out, this is my favorite band. It was the same feeling I got when I heard Nirvana for the first time. My cousin played me Smells Like Teen Spirit and then played me Nevermind. And I was like, what the fuck is this?
Right.
And then this one I discovered on my own. So that made it even more special where I was just like, this is my band.
Yes.
This is my band.
Yes.
Buying it, I had to go to Walmart to buy the tape. I mowed a couple of lawns and I was able to afford it. I bought the tape.
Lawnmower money.
Yeah. And then that's mostly how I bought my CDs.
Babysitting money, lawnmower money, that's how I financed my dreams.
Did you ever do the thing where you were like, okay, am I going to purchase this on tape or am I going to do this on CD? Because sometimes I would like Not a Surf's High Low. That was one where I was like, oh, it's cheaper on tape and I can afford this now, so I'm going to buy that.
Absolutely. It wasn't an immediate conversion over because, you know, like I couldn't even convince my parents to buy me a full CD player because we had in my room, I had a double tape deck, which was good for dubbing those tapes.
Yeah.
And I remember when I told them I wanted a CD player, if you remember, it was kind of like not that it was a fad, but it felt like this is a new thing and how long will it last, honestly? Like, is this going to be here today, gone tomorrow? So I remember the only way I could convince getting a CD player, which I mean, I probably got for a birthday or Christmas, was a little spinning, like, off-brand Discman that then you would plug into the back of the double deck tape deck. And that was how I would get it, you know?
Yeah.
But I already had amassed a nice tape collection of, you know, whether it was something that somebody had given me as a copy or whatever, but I had a lot of tapes. And so when I first started buying CDs, it was that same thing that we did from VHS to DVDs, right? You don't know. You go, well, but I already own this. Do I really need it again?
And the answer is yes.
Yes, of course I do. Eventually, you're going to buy it again and again and again.
One of the questions I want to ask is, we all know like the singles and stuff. What's your favorite video from those singles? So we have Cherub Rock, we have Today, Disarm, and Rocket that had official videos.
Yes, official videos. And my favorite of the official videos is actually Rocket.
Mine too.
I just think that the entire creativity, it had kind of that DIY. There was something about it reminded me of a film from my childhood called The Explorers.
That's exactly why it connected to me too. Yeah, Joe
Dante.
Yeah,
it connected to me, the dream of building your own spacecraft and going into space. It had a, you know, back then there was a playfulness to this band, you know, especially on this album. There was a lightheartedness with the Today video, and you know, Disarm was heavy. Cherub Rock was rocking, but this was that playful side, and it was that Valerie Faris, Jonathan Dayton style of directing, which I love, which I was fortunate enough to meet them a couple years ago. And I met them both, and I spent a lot more time with Jonathan Dayton, and he has done a bunch of movies. And I was the only one at this event that just wanted to talk to him about MTV music videos. And he was, and specifically Pumpkins. And he was kind of surprised. He was like, I was listing off all his videos that he had done. And I was like, wow, man. He's like, I got to tell you, not many people stop me and talk to me about my MTV videos 30 years later. So, to your question, Rocket is my favorite off that album. Yeah.
Mine too. Yeah. I think that's my favorite video for those exact same reasons. Yeah, it just was one of those things where it's like, I loved Explorers as a kid, and had that idea of just being like, these adults just kind of being like, yeah, whatever, you know, just ignoring those kids, and they get to go up to space. And then the outfits were cool. I kept drawing the question mark with the star on like my book covers and stuff like that. I just thought it was the coolest thing ever.
I loved it.
So, you know, we know the singles, of course, and we know, of course, everybody's going to say the non-singles Hummer, and they're gonna say Mayonnaise, but those aside, what's like low-key like your favorite buried kind of treasure on that album? Like, what's the track that's kind of a deep cut that you really love
off this album? I mean, it's funny because it's one of those albums that there's no skips. This is a no skip album.
Same for me.
I go through every single one. I don't care if Sweet Sweet is short and we're in and out of it. That is a special song right there. Because it has a lot of meaning for me, you know, all the ones do. But I would say Luna is a very precious last song on the album, really takes you out of the perfect way. Geek USA.
Yeah.
And it's one of the songs that I loved it when I first heard it, but as I got to when I grew with it, the older I got, I just heard just the master craftsmanship that is Jimmy Chamberlain in that song. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like when I started to understand just how good of a percussive genius he is. So it's really hard for me to pick like a buried, but I would say yeah, like Luna feels good because everything is big, right? Like yeah. Soma's big. Mayonnaise is, as everybody who follows my account, they know. Yeah. Mayonnaise is the one. Mayonnaise is the ride or die. That's the song that somebody said, you know, Jacob's funeral. What song are we going to play? You got to play Mayonnaise. You know, like that's it. That's the one.
Soma is a huge one. Silver Fuck, of course, is an epic.
Huge, huge. They're all so big.
But there's always like, yeah, and it kind of, it's sometimes there are tracks that just kind of rest in the shadows of those huge songs. Mm-hmm. And I'm the same way. For me, Luna and Geek USA are like kind of my favorite kind of buried tracks in there. And
I
especially
love it.
For Geek USA, because buying the tape, when I would listen to it, I'd have to, after Soma was done and I'd hear that little preacher, it was time to turn it over.
Right.
Then, yeah, Geek USA would start. So I have that association with it.
And you need to resist the devil so that he will flee.
Totally. Isn't it amazing how we can hear those breaks and those tapes and flips and everything, you know, from one track to the next? And,
yeah.
And you just memorize it a certain way. Yeah.
Exactly. So with it's 30 years now that Siamese Dream has been out. What do you see as far as, like, the impact of Siamese Dream that it's had? And how did you feel at the time? Like, because at the time, I feel like they were getting some play and you would see them on MTV playing and stuff. And they were covered quite well.
Yes, absolutely. It was a hit.
Yeah, it wasn't until after Melancholy they started kind of, people started kind of twisting the knife a little bit.
Yeah, agreed.
How do you see its legacy 30 years later?
It was an album that was ahead of its time. And as you and I both know, as huge fans, you got a chance to see how it almost drove, you know, Billy and Butch insane with the meticulous work going into it. And it was really crafted so specifically of the time. And I think that, you know, people, of course, as huge fans, people will reference and say, well, there are artists that came before them that did these walls of sound, you know, that we know. My Bloody Valentine. Everybody always loves to reference that, or people like to say, oh, well, the, you know, Pixies coined the whole loud, quiet, loud thing. And that's something you hear a lot of. And I give credit to all of those amazing artists that came before. But you can't deny that all those ingredients, all those recipes were dialed in so specifically on this album to make it uniquely Siamese Dream, because his voice sonically cuts through the thickness of that distortion in the perfect way. It slices right in the middle. And just all the tones, everything is so warm. It's so warm. Mm-hmm. And we live in an era now where things are much more digital and much more, you know, compressed and put on a computer. And but there's something about that album that you go, it was this music that I think we knew it was going to be timeless then, and it is still to this day. It's an album that you can take a, you know, 13-year-old kid and you can say, you want to hear something pretty amazing? You sit them down and you start them on Cherubrock and they'll go, this is incredible. So I think that that's the legacy it's left behind.
I think because there's a very distinct way that Billy, I mean, look, the unit as it was then, you can't deny, you know, that it, the makeup of the band, even though Billy recorded most of it with Jimmy, the image of the band too is part of it, you know, and they're
absolutely the photographs, the way that they dressed and the kind of 70s, you know, the butterfly collar aesthetic. And there's a look to that era of the Pumpkins.
Yeah.
James with the blonde hair, you know, Darcy with the blonde hair and all of and Jimmy with his long black hair. There's just in the tank tops and stuff. There's like a style of that era that you would see an image and you go, oh, that's Siamese Dream era Pumpkins right there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's very evident. I mean, also, I mean, the contributions of the band, even if they're small, the rest of the band still influence Billy approaches it. And I think there's still influence there, even if, I don't know how much of it, like what percentage is all Billy or what, you know, I don't know if that was ever clear or not.
I think what I gathered was Butch, you know, and this was a fair thing when I was listening to his podcast, he was saying how much Butch was saying, it kind of all needs to come from you, man, in order for us to make this sound so specifically you're looking for.
Yeah.
So I feel like, look, when your producer, you know, a person who's helping you put the record together says like, I'm sure these guys could add a lot and contribute to it, but I need you to really dial in and make the sound, because that's the only way it's going to be, that it's going to translate so specifically.
Yeah.
But I think you're right to your point that, of course, there is a flair of Darcy and James in those sounds because they sound like them. And whether that was just an accidental thing or a very intentional thing, I don't know, but it's there.
And I associate the band live too, because I watch Vuforia like crazy.
Totally.
So to me, it was that unit. While the recording is mostly Billy, but then also you have the contribution from James during that era too. You know, it's huge. I mean,
huge.
It's you know, that contribution along with Billy, you know, made one of the best Pumpkin songs ever.
Yes, absolutely. I think that their combination did it. Absolutely.
So I really do think that, like, even though people love to be like, well, he did everything on that, it's like, I still believe that the band existed as the Pumpkins, and every member counted. Member, you know?
Yeah, and I feel like it's, look, I feel like it's more enjoyable to look back as this, like, Polaroid picture of the band together.
Right,
because, I mean, what else do we have but the memory of that time? And so people can come in with a red pen and say, well, it was actually this.
Yeah.
I don't live for actually. Mm-hmm. I live for a feeling. I live
exactly
for something that is that takes me back to a specific time. And for me, was I well aware of what was going on outside of what I learned in Vuforia? Not really.
Yeah.
So I was able to just listen to Siamese Dream and buy the B-sides and see them playing live and believe in my heart of hearts that this was a band of four people that really enjoyed playing music together. And you can come along and red pen me to death and say, well, it wasn't that. Well, I'll go, yeah. I don't care.
I'll have my pumpkin blinders on forever.
Yes, pumpkin blinders. That's what we're gonna have a merch store. It's gonna pumpkin blinders.
And it's like Peaky Blinders, but with
exactly.
You know, I think the influence that this album has had. I mean, it cut through a lot of what was happening in alternative music at the time. You know, as much as I love Nirvana, Soundgarden, Pearl Jam, it still felt like. Like, those are, like, dudes, you know? Like, those are dudes. It kind of felt like, yeah, they're dudes making this, you know, heavy rock that I can identify with. But when I saw the Pumpkins, I was like, oh, those are my friends.
Yeah.
They're the band geeks. They're the band geeks starting a band. Like, it felt possible to me.
Yeah.
That, like, all of a sudden, because of the makeup of it, I'm like, that looks more like my friend group than, say, Soundgarden, which I'd be like terrified of if I ever was in a room with them, you know?
right.
So it just felt like home to me. It just felt like it belonged. And I don't know about you, but I always find every couple of years the album kind of takes on a new meaning for me.
I think that's true.
I find something new, or I find something new to relate to, or it means something different to me, but still very impactful.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's so interesting about growing up and growing older is I used to digest CDs in order and from start to finish. That used to just be part of the ritual. And if you were going to listen to an album, you were going to listen to the album. And you hear guys my age talking like this all the time. But I just mean that it was part of the ceremony. It was part of the, you know, you sat down and decided, I'm going to listen to Siamese Dream. You didn't sit down and say, I'm going to listen to Today. That's just not how it worked for me and for most of us back then. And so as I got older and started to use iTunes and then switch over to streaming platforms, I began to get in the bite-sized, you know, where I had a mix or I would happen upon a song. It wasn't until recently, especially with making videos online, that I've kind of returned back to listening to an album from start to finish.
Yeah.
And it is remarkable to me the kind of feeling that it can evoke now at my age of memories and nostalgia, but also where I am now and how I'm consuming this music from start to finish and how it feels to listen to a song from beginning to end. As a father, as a man in his 40s, as a guy who's worked jobs and chased his dreams and had rises and falls and experienced death. I mean, I'm just not the same person that I was when I was 13, 14, 15 years old listening to these heavy things. I've loved, I've lost. And there are lyrics, there are moments that can just cut right through you because you're like, I never really listened to that way before, you know, then it gets you. So it does. I think it does kind of become something of a new experience. And I look forward to seeing what Siamese Dream's going to feel like on the 40th anniversary, you know?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Now you just kind of blew my mind there being like, oh, yeah, wait a minute.
Like, wait a second. There's going to be a 40th anniversary?
Yeah, we'll have you back for the 40th.
2033, have me back. Hologram of Jacob on the Pumpcast.
Yeah, and I'll be just a floating head, Futurama style.
Perfect. I love that we've only got 10 years until there.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I mean, look, change is happening. AI is going to take over. We're all
That's right. What are we even talking about? There's going to be the new bands, and they're all AI.
Right. I just got depressed thinking about that. But
oh, so sorry. I don't mean
back
it.
Hope and happiness. Yeah. I mean, I'm really excited for more people to. I feel like the Pumpkins are in a good place right now for a younger generation to discover their music. You know, whether it be from TV shows or just seeing the t-shirts, you know, out in the wild at like your Targets or Walmart and whatever, and just being like, hey, what's that? And checking that out. And then like looking up online, like, hey, what are the Pumpkins' best albums? What should I check out? You know, at the top of those lists, you know, more than likely is going to be Siamese Dream, Melancholy, and people are going to check it out and be like, whoa, I get goosebumps thinking about people's first time, like a future fan, taking their first moment of listening to the album start to finish and how that affects them. And it just makes me so happy to think about that. And I think that
totally
it's the lasting power of that album. Like I said, it just cut through that time. And for me, doing this podcast, going through the whole discography, it really is amazing how certain albums hit with me now, because I'm at the age that Billy was going through, you know, when he wrote this album or that album or whatever. Yeah, and I'm like, oh, I see where he's coming from with Adore. I see where he's coming from with even Zeitgeist or whatever. You know, like what it's really amazing and so rewarding to have that experience. But with Siamese Dream too, it was such a nod towards the future of being like Sweet Sweet or Luna. You're not going to kind of hear that on, like, maybe an REM album, maybe, but, like, you know what I mean? Like, other bands weren't really doing these kind of, like, or even, like, with Silverfuck, this kind of weird, or Space Boy, that's kind of more of, like, a Bowie throwback.
It's all over the place.
Yeah. It's all over the place, but cohesive. Yeah, that's what I love about it.
Jinx, yo me a Coke.
Jinx, buy me a Coke. Oh, snap, man, we're still saying the same thing. This is amazing. Carrots, pumpernickels, glow sticks, twins.
No, I was going to say, it's true. And it's interesting because, you know, the more I've gone out and, you know, we've both met each other at shows before, and you meet teenagers checking out shows, and their exposure to the Pumpkins is now, and it's hearing the music that's coming out now, and they're jamming with it and they're liking it, and then they're discovering the older stuff. And so for me, I just feel like, you know, every ounce of music is just the way we interpret it, experience it. It has everything to do with where you are in your life when you hear it.
Yeah.
You know, if you're 14 and you're falling in love and you're hearing, you know, Adore or Machina or Oceania or whatever it is, and there's a song that just
clicks for you,
then Godspeed. Enjoy your Pumpkins journey. May you dive in. And I've seen these amazing charts online that say, like, you want to know where to start? Start here. You want more moody and heavy? Go here. You want more bright and poppy? Go here. You want, and I love that because it's like, yeah, man, you look, there's a song for every feeling, a song for every mood, and a band that has really stayed around this long, there's a song for every generation. So
absolutely, yeah.
I feel grateful that I was lucky enough to have them as a teenager, and they've grown old with me.
Well, any final thoughts? Just because we got to wrap it up. We're dads with a life here.
Of course,
just kind of jumping on talking about Siamese Dream.
Few stop starts for our children, you know.
We've edited that out, but maybe I'll have that as an extra bonus feature.
A bonus.
10 years from now when I release this episode.
Totally, the 40th anniversary.
30 years. What are your final thoughts before we leave that you want to express about Siamese Dream?
I want to say that this is that album that I'm grateful for, because I feel like it's the reason why I'm making this kind of stuff that I am to this day. My love and admiration of music and my own desire to make it, I owe a lot of it to this starting point.
Yeah.
And I don't know where I would be musically without it. It has infused everything that I've wanted to do, from the guitars I wanted to buy, from the pedals I wanted to play, to the sound I wanted to record, to the voice. I was in a high school band and I was doing the most hilariously bad impression of Billy Corgan in my high school band, improvising lyrics on distorted, squealing guitars, you know, like I was watching Vuforia and I was channeling it. So I just, my closing thoughts is I could not possibly be more grateful for an album than I am for Siamese Dream. And for the record, you talked about wearing out copies. I'm going to tell you right now, I am so meticulous with my CDs that I still have every single original one. And if you look on the back of the CD, it's like a mirror, because what? I'm like a museum curator when it comes to my CDs.
I wish I took better care of my CDs back in the day. Some of them I did, but like some of them I just couldn't help it because I was just like
totally
taking them everywhere with me. And
well, you know, people would try to borrow mine and I would go, no, no, because I've seen the way that they would stack their discs throw them in the case logic.
Crazy.
And I'd be like, don't you dare. My brother did it.
Ugh.
And he would be like, Jake, can I borrow this? And I'd go, no.
Yeah. I know. I remember getting so mad at one of my friends for borrowing Razorblade Suitcase by Bush. And I went over to their house and it was just there on the floor. And I'm like, what are you doing?
What are you doing? You monster.
That really did. That's so funny you mentioned that. My cousin was that way, where she just had CDs all over the floor.
Stacks.
And just like, even stacks, just like on the floor.
Spread out. Like a deck of cards. Yep. Just like.
And then if it skipped, then she was just like, yeah, I'll just put like crazy glue or something. You know, like how whatever.
Right.
Was
they had
that,
all those tricks that they'd be like, oh, yeah, you can buff that right out. I'm like, I don't want to have to buff anything out.
Well, I mean, I like you, it changed my life. I learned how to play the guitar by, you know, following along with the tab books from Siamese Dream and Melancholy.
Totally.
And I mean, I wouldn't be who I am today without that album.
Same.
Like, even like without, also, you were brave for trying to do the Billy Register. I didn't even try. I was like, Chino, I'm going to be copying you. When I had a band in high school, I was like,
yeah,
I can handle it. Daniel Johns, Chino, I can do that. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I tried to do the Billy. I wasn't always successful, but I did. I did.
But it changed my life. It changed in more ways than one. There's stuff in there. I mean, I've talked to people in private about this too, but like, there are just so many things that this album did for me, that this band at that era did for me, and that continues to this day to just be part of every cell of my body. You know, so it's not a part of me is what I'm trying to say.
Totally.
Like, I just can't leave it behind, and it's just one of the best goddamn albums ever.
Yep.
And I feel like I'm losing my train of thought a lot because it's such a important album to me, and there's so much that I want to say.
Yeah, we could do this for days. We could sit here and just talk about it. We could gush. Like we said at the beginning, just let us gush about how much we love Siamese Dream. I'm sure you are like me in that anybody you've ever known in your life, because like not everybody's a diehard Pumpkins fan, but you go through life like teenager to now, and you have people come and go from your life, and they'll contact you years later, and they'll go, I heard a Smashing Pumpkins song the other day, and I totally thought of you. And isn't that the greatest feeling in the world? Where they're like, I was listening to the radio, and you know, tonight came on and I thought of you.
Yep.
And I'm like, ah, mission accomplished.
Yeah.
I did it.
I'm definitely the Pumpkins friend that people
remember.
I'm
totally the Pumpkins friend. Yep.
Well, Jacob, thank you so much
for joining.
I mean, look, I know it's unavoidable for Billy during the 30th anniversary. I know he doesn't love, you know, kind of looking back at this era too much, but I mean, it's inevitable. It's going to happen.
Inevitable. We got to celebrate it.
And I think he's coming around to like hearing people praise the album and stuff again. And he's got to know that it means a lot to people. As long as you're not an asshole about it, let's repeat this.
Yeah.
As long as you're not an asshole about it,
I
think he'll be okay about it. Okay.
Yeah.
We want Siamese Dream 2. None of this. Why don't you do it? Don't
none
be a
of
dick.
That. None of that. Neither you
dick.
Or I are that kind of fan at
no.
all. At all.
But we can praise it. We can love it.
Yes.
We can give it the accolades it deserves.
Absolutely.
So with that, Jacob, thank you so much for joining. Anything you want to plug?
Thank you, sir. No. If you don't know my stuff, just find me on the TikToks, the Jacob Givens, and also Instagram, just Jacob Givens. Pretty much, you type in Jacob Givens on Google, you'll find me everywhere. So that's all
awesome.
I ask for.
Are you going to be at any of the upcoming shows?
Yeah, I'm going to try to get to Irvine for sure.
Nice. So me and Pat will be at Irvine. Everybody listening, I will try to do... we will try to do some kind of tour type of episode after Irvine. Nice. Maybe Pat and I We'll do a quick one on site. But otherwise, look out for the Cotillions episode coming out in a few days or next week. And on that note, we bid you all a fond farewell and good night.